Ireland in the 1590s was a troubled land. The English Queen, Elizabeth I, was overseeing a violent reconquest of the island. This pushed the Irish and Ulster into revolt, leading to a conflict that became known as the Nine Years' War. My next exclusive episode, only available to supporters of the show on Acast Plus and Patreon, will focus on the intriguing story of this war. Sign up today for Acast Plus in the links below and get that fascinating episode on September the 8th.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
What is Christian doing depositing metalwork into this bog of skulls and decapitated animals and cauldrons? These human remains are 100% deliberate depositions into this wetland environment.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer. Every so often, an archaeological excavation hits the headlines, but rarely are they as sensational as recent discoveries at Gert na Cruinne in County Roscommon. What you heard at the top of the show gives you some sense of this remarkable site and what lies ahead of us in today's show. During a year-long excavation led by Dr. Eve Campbell, archaeologists gained an intriguing insight into the often unsettling and strange rituals and spiritual practices of our ancestors. While news reports have focused on a large pagan idol found at the site, the team of archaeologists also discovered human skulls and large quantities of animal bone, which appeared to have been offerings to pagan gods. While the excavations have only recently finished, and it will take months, if not years, before we have definitive reports and analysis, I got the chance to interview the director of the excavation, Dr. Eve Campbell, for today's show. In this podcast, Eve reveals what she found, as well as some theories as to what this incredible site was used for. Now, before I start the discussion with Eve, I have two exciting announcements. Firstly, the War of Independence series is returning in 2 weeks' time on September the 19th. I'm really excited to be starting back on the series, and I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who has supported the show on Patreon and Acast Plus over the last few months. You've allowed me to take the time needed to prepare the upcoming episodes. You are the people who ensure the show continues to be produced, so thanks very much. Now, while the War of Independence series is 2 weeks away, next week I have an exclusive episode for supporters of the show on Acast Plus and Patreon. This is the story of the Nine Years' War. If you want to support the show and get that episode, subscribing on Acast Plus or Patreon is really easy. There are links in the show notes below, and there's hours of exclusive content, while all episodes for supporters over there are ad-free. You can find out more at patreon.com/Irish podcast. The other piece of good news is that as the pandemic is easing here in Ireland, I'm delighted to announce my first live event in nearly 2 years is happening on September the 19th. Now, during the worst days of the COVID lockdown, it was hard to see something like this happening, so I'm super excited about this. It's going to be a really special day, and it's actually on a similar topic to this episode. Last summer, you will remember, I made a series called The Road to Old Crohan, which looked at the story of an Iron Age ritual murder of a body found in a bog in County Offaly. Well, on Sunday, September the 19th, I'm organising a special event on Croaghan Hill and the surrounding area where Damien and Miriam, who feature in that series, will guide you through this amazing landscape explaining the story of the Bog Body or Croaghan Man. It's going to be a super day. The whole event takes place outdoors, so it's going to be safe in terms of COVID. The tour will last about 3 hours and will take you to the summit of Croaghan Hill and then into the bog where old Croaghan Man met his end nearly 2,000 years ago. Tickets are just £12.49 at croaghan.eventbrite.com. As always, supporters of the show have a reduction. If you are a supporter, you can get 20% off tickets today. You'll find details in the show notes about how to get that offer. And now to the episode. The story of the site at Gurt na Cruinne first emerged a few weeks ago when archaeologists reported that they had found a large pagan idol over 1600 years old at the site. So I began my interview with Eve by asking her about this rare artefact, of which only 12 have been found in Ireland. As Eve now explains, it was found on the first day of the dig.
The site was found during pre-construction archaeological phase of works on the N5 in Roscommon. So we were an archaeological consultancy. We were drafted in to carry out those archaeological works. So the site was found during a process called test excavation. So it's basically where you dig a really narrow trench along the length of the road. And you have an archaeologist who's there monitoring. And if they spot anything archaeological, they say stop. That becomes a site and it's excavated. So that when the road goes ahead, no archaeological material is destroyed, which is, because archaeology is really enmeshed into our planning legislation. So that's kind of the process. So it was a pretty normal day. We had identified what we call a burnt spread or a fullock tvia on the site in testing. Hundreds of these have been found in roads in Ireland. They were a really common site type. So it wasn't anything too exciting. And one of my colleagues was down on the site and they were monitoring what's called the opening up of the site. So just kind of stripping all the topsoil off, all the plough soil, which is all mixed up and doesn't really tell us much archaeologically. So they were monitoring that being stripped off. And it was during this process that they found the object. It was initially, it was on its back, it was face down. So it just looked like a big tree trunk, you know, and there's tons of wood in bogs. If anybody is familiar with bogs, they're just full of old wood, most of it not archaeological. So the machine kind of revealed it. And then they went over to have a look because it was a big piece and they saw the notches and knew exactly what it was because they're quite a distinctive artifact type. And shortly after that, in the next couple of hours, they discovered part of a prehistoric plough. So once we had those two objects, we knew we were onto something big.
While we will move on to the rest of the site, given that the idol is somewhat unusual, I asked Eve to explain what it looks like.
It's a 2.5 metre long oak trunk that's been kind of roughly hewn and roughly carved. So the trunk's been split in half and there's been some material taken off the back. At one end of it, it has a really small stylized head. And actually, a lot of the head is actually rotten away. It's not in very good condition because of the dryness of the bog that it was in. And then all along the body, there's 9 notches carved into the length of the body. It's kind of interesting because since we publicized it, we've had a lot of, there's been a lot of discussion on social media and like a lot of hubbub about the find, which is really brilliant. And, you know, we've had a lot of commenters saying, that's not an idol, that's a ladder, some people said, oh, it's a dugout canoe. And they're like really good suggestions. I definitely see why people think that. But we know we're pretty sure on our identification for a number of reasons, I suppose. So the first is we know what ladders look like in prehistoric period. This doesn't match what those look like. What it does match is a group of objects which have been noted in the archaeological record. And they're known kind of as notched figures or notched idols. And there tend to be single long pieces of wood with a rough kind of shaped head at one end, and they have these kind of notched lines down the figure of the body. And there's been about 12 wooden prehistoric wooden figures found in Ireland, and a good chunk of them are comprise this kind of notched kind. And they're also known from the continent because prehistoric wooden figures are, I suppose, they're a Northern European phenomenon more broadly. So they're found in anywhere where there's bogs. So there's we find them in Germany and Denmark and Scandinavia. And this exact type with the kind of notches on the body, there's an example from Denmark, which is really, really interesting. It's a site called Rebuild in Denmark, and there's a very similar figure. So there's something really interesting happening here in terms of the it's an artifact type essentially, so it's like something that we can recognize, it's a pattern we can recognize. Our object was actually broken in two in antiquity. And that's something we can maybe come back to because, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the killing of some of these figures, you know. So there's several of them have been noted to be placed into the bog in a deliberate way, or pinned into the bog in a way analogous to the bog body. So that's one of the theories that scholars have talked about in relation to them.
Interesting as this artifact was, what really sets the site at Gurt na Cruanna apart was the wider context. The archaeological excavation continued for a year, turning up a huge range of artifacts. Before we talk about these, though, I first asked Eve to create a picture for you of what the site looked like so you have a better understanding of what we're talking about. Just a heads up, if you're unfamiliar with them, a drumlin that Eve references is a small hill and they're common in the northern half of Ireland.
Our site is essentially, it's a shoreline site. So if you can imagine, we have this east-west drumlin, and at the bottom of the drumlin, on the southern side of the drumlin, you've got the slow river called the Auna River. And what happened was, over time, this river developed what's kind of called fen peat. So it's a type of peat that's formed from groundwater. So this fen peat developed all along the river, and there was a lake opening up to the east, and that all filled up with peat. Boggy ground, wet ground associated with the river. But we also have material on the dry land too. So we have some really interesting things. We have a barrow or a ring ditch, which is a type of later prehistoric burial monument.
Eve then went on to explain the exceptional range of finds she uncovered.
Just to summarise the site of Gurt na Cruanna, what we essentially have is a sacred bog where over several thousand years, people deposited important objects, human remains and animal remains into the water. And the earliest deposition we have is from the late Neolithic, and it continues all the way through to the early medieval period. And we have a sort of a focus in the later prehistoric period. And some of the kind of objects that we're talking about are, we have a beautiful iron-bladed dagger with a wooden handle. We have a bunch of bone pins. We have a gorgeous late Bronze Age copper alloy pin. We have leather objects. We have a ard, which is part of a wooden, part of a plough. We have also part of a wooden cauldron, which is really interesting. Lots of kind of assorted other wooden bits of fragments of artifacts that you often get in bogs. So things, bits that could be part of vehicles or fragments like that. An iron spear, an iron blade. The biggest eco fact really that we found on the site was animal bones. My office was packed to the gills with boxes of animal bones during the excavation. So we have huge amounts of, obviously, until the full analysis is done, we won't know exactly what everything is. But what we can tell so far is that we have a lot of cattle. We have deer, we have sheep, we have pig, and also we have a lot of dog as well. So a lot of this bone is what we call disarticulated. That means that it's kind of been, you know, the skeleton is in different bits. So maybe it's been butchered. But really interestingly, we also have quite a lot of semi-articulated or articulated animal remains. So that means the whole animal is going in with the flesh on the bone. So it's kind of like an animal burial or a partial animal burial. So we had an entire deer that was buried, and we had a bunch of dogs that were buried. We've got in and around 10 dogs from the excavation. Some of them are just the skull, but there's at least maybe three of them that are the full dog that's been deposited into the peat. We also have a lot of decapitated heads. So we have quite a lot of cattle heads. So we know that it's been decapitated because we can see that the whole head is articulated. So we've got the top, the cranium, and then we also have the mandible. So that we know when that went into the piece, it was the entire head and sometimes the top of the vertebrae. So that's a really interesting pattern. And then, of course, we have human remains as well. And sticking with the theme of the head, that's mostly cranial fragments. So we've got the remains of up to 8 individuals, so a maximum of 8 and maybe at least 4, so 4 to 8 individuals. And they're all represented solely by cranial fragments. So in one case, it seems like it's a decapitated head because we have the head, we've got the cranium, but we also have suggestions of a single vertebrae stuck up inside it. So we have to wash all the bones and get them analysed to find out. And in the other cases, it's just kind of cranial fragments. So the body was elsewhere and they potentially like broke the skull or cut the skull and took the bones here because they felt it was important to deposit them into this one particular location.
So Eve was slowly building up a picture of a sacred bog. But before I asked her what it all meant, I had to ask more about the human remains found at Gurt na Cruanna. Ever since I made that series, The Road to Ó Cruachan, human sacrifice and the deposition of human remains in bogs in prehistory has intrigued me. In this instance, I was curious, how did Eve know these weren't just the remains of someone who had accidentally fallen into the bog? Was there evidence of violence, such as cut marks?
These human remains are 100% deliberate depositions into this wetland environment. They're all skull fragments. You know, one of them seems to be like a decapitated head, like a severed head. The others are kind of fragments from the rest of the skull. So the bodies were elsewhere, and these pieces of the bodies were taken and deposited along with other kinds of objects. We have these little groupings of objects kind of placed in. So a number of the skull fragments are placed in association with parts of a wooden cauldron and with a number of other kind of heads. So we have a stag's head with colossal, really massive antlers. We have a number of cow heads. We have a horse's head and these human skull fragments. They're all put in together. But it's also really interesting that the river, the Aon Nor River, which our site is associated with, has a number of stray skulls that were retrieved from it and are in the museum. So within about like 4 kilometres of the site, there's at least 3 other skulls, some of which I think have been dated to the Bronze and Iron Age. So there's something really interesting happening here with the deposition of skulls. And, you know, that's not crazy for the Iron Age, because there's a whole literature on the significance of the skull and the head in Iron Age Europe. And, you know, I think that has much earlier origins in the Bronze Age as well. So, like, in terms of thinking about, like, what does that mean? That's like maybe a little bit more of a difficult question. And it could be read in different ways. So it could be read certainly as the skulls of the enemies, you know, severed and taken as battle trophies and put into this place. But you know, there's other kind of ways that could happen. It could be the skulls of a revered ancestor. So you know, that sounds initially a bit out there, but you know, think about Catholic relics that many people might be familiar with. And we know that in prehistoric Europe, people are curating the bones of their dead, and they're keeping little bits of them, and they're putting them into their houses and they're reburying them. So there's a really dynamic kind of interaction with the bodies of the dead. It seems a bit alien to us in modern society, but would have been quite the norm in the past. The dominant burial rite in the Iron Age is cremation. So the normal way to treat a body is to burn it. So it's quite interesting that they're being placed unburnt into the bog. There's something important there, and there's something distinctive there. Hopefully, now at the moment, I have the bones haven't been analysed, but when they are analysed, we'll be able to get a lot more information. So we'll be able to get like, you raised the question of like cut marks. We'll be able to see, for example, if there's any cut marks on the kind of potential severed head, to say if that was like cut with a sword or anything like that. And with the other skull fragments, we'll be able to see if there's any marks on the skulls, to see if they were like prized off the rest of the skull with blades, or how that happened. And also age, possibly sex for some of them, because we do have some with some of the diagnostic elements, such as like brow ridges and stuff. So we can sometimes tell. So that's going to be really interesting.
In our discussion, I was amazed by the collection of incredible artifacts Eve and her team had uncovered. But I guess the key question is, what does it all mean when you put it together? Could Gartner Crana help to unlock the religious beliefs of long past societies? Again, to provide you a context, I asked Eve to give you a time frame of when the site was in use.
The earliest activity we have on the site is dating to the late Neolithic. So the Neolithic is really the first farmers, and it's part of the Stone Age. And so I suppose that activity is probably dated to around 2600, 2700 BC. When I'm talking about the late Iron Age material, we're talking about the centuries AD. So well, the carbon dates that we've got back from some of our material, about kind of like 200 to 400 AD. So those kind of centuries just after the birth of Christ, I suppose, and before Ireland's been Christianized. That's sort of late Iron Age.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now, for me, that was mind-blowing. People were returning to this site for 3,000 years. That's longer than Christianity or Islam have been in existence. While Eve has most of the analysis still ahead of her, we did tentatively chat about what the site may have meant to our ancestors. Now, before you hear Eve's thoughts on this, don't forget you can get your tickets for that tour on September the 19th at crohan.eventbrite.com. As I said earlier, that tour is very much along a similar theme to this episode and focuses on the story of a bog body from the Iron Age. You can find out more at crohan.eventbrite.com. That's spelled crohan.eventbrite.com. But now back to Gurtha na Cranna and what it may have meant to our ancestors who practiced these rituals here. Eve started with the wooden idol that has dominated much of the media narrative.
As I mentioned, there's been several of these objects found in Ireland before. So, you know, this is about the 12th wooden figure found. And they tend to be kind of found in, there's a strong association with trackways. So several of them have been found on some of the surveys of the commercial, bogs in the Midlands that have been carried out by archaeologists. And they're found like in association with trackways or in trackways. One of them is from the Corlay trackway up in Longford, the Great Iron Age trackway, which, you know, some of you might be familiar with. And in that context, they've sometimes been talked about as figures of protection because the bog is a really dangerous place. It's a perilous place, kind of physically because it's wet and it's dangerous and you could drown in it. But also maybe we can think about some of the other associations that like how it might be dangerous. There's this kind of in-between place. It's kind of outside the bounds of civilization in a sense. It's not cultivatable land and it's kind of, you know, it's a dangerous place on other levels perhaps as well. So that's, you know, one of the theories that's been put forward. One of the really interesting things about our object is that we've got a little bit more contextual information for it in that it's associated, in our site, it's associated with this whole depositional complex where we have all these other artifacts that have been put into the wetland, but also the huge amounts of animal bone. And my theory very much is that what we have at this site is some kind of animal sacrifice. And I suppose some people might go, oh, animal sacrifice, it's like a little bit out there. But I suppose in a way, it's, you know, RNA, like later prehistoric Ireland, like today, you know, it's a rural society and cattle and other livestock are hugely important to, you know, socially and economically, and people need to kill them. Butchering animals is a really normal part of life in a rural society. And what you sometimes get with, you know, animal sacrifice is the ritualizing of that killing and kind of, putting layers of ceremony on top of it. So what I suspect happens, and hopefully this will be either proven or disproven or borne out by some of the analysis, is that animals are being butchered and parts of them, perhaps heads, you know, we have some examples for that, are being placed back into the bog and the rest of them are being butchered. And probably we have some associated feasting where the meat has been carried off and kind of other activities are happening. Maybe there might be some, we have a lot of scrapers, so could be some leather working maybe happening there. But that's kind of the broad picture that I have off the site. And I think the idol could have really fed into that. So when we look at the context of sites that some of these similar wooden figures are found in the continent, they're often found on sites associated with animal sacrifice. We suspect we very much think the object was standing upright. And so it's probably standing upright somewhere along the shoreline. And I've got a number of like nice big pits that could be candidates for where it would have stood originally. We'll have to go back and comb those with a fine tooth comb to just check they're the right size and everything. So it's probably upstanding there. It's possibly involved in these different kind of ceremonies. And then at whatever point it's deemed appropriate, it's taken down and it's buried. Just one comment on, you know, the objects as a group. So one of the really exciting things about our object is the date. So it's actually got a really, really late date. So roughly 250 to 400 AD. So that's like really at the end of the Iron Age. It's just before Christianity is coming to Ireland. And really, we know so little. We really know very little about what kind of beliefs and practices people had in pre-Christian Ireland. You know, it's tricky to find out. So this site is providing us with a really interesting insight into that. And most of the other notched figures that are kind of similar to the one we found here date from much earlier. So they tend to be, a lot of them are from the Bronze Age. So we have this really tantalizing potential continuity of practice with this kind of very same similar form being used over 1,000 years earlier in some of the other bog sites. And here we have it at our site in Gortna Crana. And we can't assume it was the same kind of rituals or the same practices, but there's something continuing there, some kind of thread of continuity of some kind.
Eve also highlighted the wider landscape as being important in terms of understanding the site.
I think there's some interesting things to, you know, to sort of parse out of, like, looking at wetland, why people are putting stuff into watery contexts. And again, that's an ancient theme. And it's something that you get, like, around the world as well. It's kind of one of those perennial around the world and through time, people are drawn to water is sacred, isn't it? It's really central to survival and to life. But there's also some kind of interesting material qualities that bogs have that scholars highlighted as maybe being significant. So particularly with kind of stagnant bog pools, you get these kind of wonderful reflective surfaces. So in a society where you don't really, you know, you don't have mirrors. So if anyone's going to see reflection of themselves or other people or of the sky, it's going to be in water. It's going to be in still water. You know, I was thinking particularly of, say, some of John Waddell's work on where he talks about the other world as this place of inversion, where everything's kind of back to front and the other way around, that these kind of watery, boggy places are kind of, you know, they're kind of like portals or like liminal places where you can access the other world or you can connect to the other world. They're also, you know, people talk about, you know, they're outside of the cultivated land, like you can't grow things in them. They're not like, you know, they're kind of this, there's a wildness to them. There's a danger to them, like, because you can drown in them. They're not quite land and they're not quite water. You know, if you think about a bog, it's kind of this soft, but it's perilous and there can be bog holes in it. So there's a lot of kind of characteristics there that people have talked about in terms of like why, you know, bogs or boggy ground or those kind of wet places, you know, were seen as important. It's also, if you put something into a bog, you can't really get it back. Like, you know, if you bury a hoard on dry land, you can dig it back up again. But if you put it into a bog, it's given to the gods for good. So a lot of scholarship talks about it in kind of that sense, so that it's kind of giving things back to the gods, and that could be framed in different ways, you know, as a bargain, as thanks, as a pleading, as, you know, there's lots of different kind of ways that that's kind of been talked about. And there's, you know, there's a lot of questions as well about, you know, at what social scale is this happening? Is this like small local groups? Is it bigger? Is it individuals coming? Is it villages coming? So there's, you know, there's a lot of different really interesting questions or kind of ways we can approach this.
To conclude, we discussed some of the challenges Eve faces as she tries to analyse the artefacts found at Gortna Crana. She also explained some of the techniques archaeologists use in this situation.
I do have a lot of really amazing finds, but when you kind of span it out over the span of its life, it's not, you know, if you think about this in the course of millennia, you know, it's not a huge amount of material because it's such a long time depth. So like maybe when we start to, you know, we only have two radiocarbon dates from the site now for the idol and for the ard, but like we're going to, you know, implement a radiocarbon program, particularly for the animal bone, focusing on the articulated remains. And that will maybe help us to think about like the time depth that this is happening over. Is it all over a couple of centuries or is it really spread out? I mean, certainly the earliest material, as I mentioned, we have one of the trackways. We essentially have in one area, you have a series of platforms like stone and brushwood platforms. So when I say brushwood, I mean small things like hazel. People kind of know that kind of stuff, like small little twigs making some platforms there. And then over to the other side, I have like a trackway that's running out into the wetland. And the trackway is kind of held in place by big posts. So you can think of like sheep fencing posts that people use for sheep fencing. Like that, only, you know, a lot of, like, less, not mass produced. And we've been working with Kathy Moore, who's a wood specialist. She's really amazing. And she has a magic power that's probably a very hard one, where she can look at the tool marks on the wood and she's able to really accurately kind of date them, because woodworking tools like axes and adzes, they change through time. So archaeologists have typologies, you know, so you can say, oh, this is a Neolithic one, this is an early Bronze Age one, this is a late Bronze Age one, that's an Iron Age one. So So all the woodworking in the area seemed to be Iron Age. So we were pretty sure, and we were getting iron material from it. And then we started to find all this pottery. And as an archaeologist, that's really weird because we don't really have pottery in Iron Age Ireland. So I was really, you know, a bit confused. I was like, maybe there's something earlier happening here. And then when we got the pottery analysed by Owen Grogan, he said, this is grooveware, which is late Neolithic pottery. So that was pretty mind-blowing. Because that's, you know, thousands of years earlier. But it just goes to show, you know, I suspect that there's, you know, gaps in the use of the site, but that it remained as a place that was seen as important or as a place that you would deposit things for a long period of time. And as I mentioned before, one of our latest artifacts is really interesting because it's an early medieval ring pin. So what is a Christian, so-called good early medieval Christian, doing depositing metalwork into this bog of skulls and decapitated animals and cauldrons, you know? So it's a really nice little, just kind of little snippet of a view into like that whole period of conversion and how older beliefs might have persisted, even though they're largely, you know, pretty invisible or hard to track down in some of the historical texts. We also have a single, we've got a single east-west inhumation just beside our ring ditch or barrow on the dry land. So that's really interesting as well, because that kind of burial rite is often associated with Christian burial. And the ring ditch would be kind of late prehistoric. It could be Iron Age, an Iron Age kind of burial monument. It's essentially a circular ditch where cremated bone was inserted. So who is this person, this one single person who had a burial, maybe beside their ancestors? It could have been their parents. It could have been a gap of centuries, and then they're buried there. But the site remains a draw and is a known place in the landscape after the Christian period.
As part of the process of understanding Gurtha na Cranna, a replica of the idol found there has been made and will in time be accessible to the public, as Eve now explains.
So that's one of the reasons actually why we embarked on a project to create a replica of the object, because that means that, well, first of all, it gives us a much better sense of what the object would have originally been like, because we can put it upright. It's all in one piece. Our object was found in two pieces. And we can kind of, conjecturally reconstruct parts that were really badly damaged, like the head, for example. And then also it means that, we made a replica in Craganone with a group of people from the Palace Boy Project and from UCD, from the Centre for Experimental Archaeology, and some people from our company, AMS. And that object is really excitingly going to be going to Tulsk, to the Rathgrahan Centre, which is just beside where the object was originally found. It was found between Elphin and Tulsk. So we're really excited about that, because it will mean like it's accessible. People can go, they can see it. It'll be really near to where it originally was, and you can get a photo with it. You can go up and touch it. You can leave it at a little sacrifice if you want, in a way, you know, you really couldn't do with the original object because it's so delicate.
I'd like to thank Eve for her time and this fascinating interview. I'll be back next week with that exclusive show on Patreon and Acast Plus on the 9 Years' War. Then the War of Independence series returns the following week. Finally, don't forget to get your tickets for that event on September the 19th at crahan.eventbrite.com. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Until next time, Sloan.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Don't forget to check out Acast Plus for exclusive episodes of the show you won't have heard before. You'll also get ad-free versions of all episodes of the Irish History Podcast over there as well. And if that's not enough, there's the new exclusive monthly show where I interview historians, and the first of these is on the history of the Knights Templar in Ireland. That's going to be a fascinating episode. So why not enjoy an enhanced listening experience where you can immerse yourself in history with no advertising? It's really easy to sign up. Just follow the links in the show notes below.